by putting these lectures on your mobile device. So the idea is that this board, called the review board, kind of reviews what we talked about last time, gives you a chance to ask questions. So the main topics for last time were velocity and acceleration and average and instantaneous. And this idea of average velocity and average acceleration, those, they're not going to play a big role in this course. We mostly just use those to introduce the idea of instantaneous velocity and acceleration. So the average velocity is the distance you traveled over a finite period of time, and we use this symbol capital delta in order to indicate a change in position and a change in time. Now, if we make the time that we're measuring our change in position is really short, so we have a really small value of delta t and a really small value of delta x, both of those will be small, but the ratio will be a finite amount. And if we actually take the mathematical limit as the times become very close together, then we have what's called the derivative, and that's the instantaneous velocity. If you haven't taken calculus, it's the slope, right? So it's just the slope of the position versus time curve. So here's a graph of position versus time. Here the slope is zero, so the velocity is zero. As we move along, we go to a big speed, and then we slow down, and then we actually go backwards with a negative velocity. And I've tried to sketch that kind of down here, where we have an initial velocity of zero. Initial velocity of zero, we reach a maximum velocity, and then we slow down until we're at zero, and then we actually have negative velocities. Well, if you do it once, you can do it again. So velocity was change in position with time. Acceleration is change in velocity with time. So we can have average accelerations, and we can have instantaneous accelerations. Instantaneous accelerations are the slope of the velocity versus time curve. So here, we've got a big acceleration. It's going to zero, and then it's going negative.
Is that a straight line, or is it supposed to be curved?
Well, you know, it's a sketch, right? It is what it is. How's that for an answer? We could use a program to actually do perfect versions of this. So in any case, we go down this this tower by looking at slopes. We can go up by looking at the area under. So the area between between time equals zero and this time, that tells us what the change in position is.
For the last, the acceleration graph, how do you know, what would be an example of it going up? Is that when there's no negative velocity?
Oh, where the acceleration was going up?
Yeah.
So it's mostly we're going to be dealing with cases of constant or decreasing acceleration. So it's kind of hard to come up with cases where the acceleration is increasing. But I can give you an example of that. If you think about a rocket engine that's firing, it turns out because it's losing mass, it weighs less every second, and so it's going to be going not just faster, but it's going to accelerate faster every second. So you might wonder, why quit? I mean, why not go on the next one down this stack? And they call them jerks, but they turn out not to be useful. So acceleration is the right place to quit in this stack. More questions? So it's kind of hard to figure out whether the acceleration is positive or negative just by looking at the position versus time graph. So we looked at this, sometimes called the smile theorem. You can see that this piece of the graph looks like a piece of a smile. And there, the acceleration is positive. This piece of the graph looks like a frown, and there's where the acceleration is negative. So the last five, there's kind of these special words, right? Slope means the same thing as derivative. Area is really the integral. Speed, if I'm being careful, and I won't always be careful, means the absolute value of the velocity. So velocities can be positive or negative, but speeds are always positive. Your speedometer on your car can't go negative. This word deaccelerate just means that the acceleration is negative. So in the last 5 minutes, we talked about the special case of constant acceleration. If we've got constant acceleration, then that means the slope of velocity versus time is a constant, which means it's a line. And we can describe lines by y-intercepts plus slope times the x-coordinate. So in this case, it's going to be the initial velocity times the slope, which is the acceleration, times the x-coordinate, which is the time. If we look at the area under this curve, it's kind of this trapezoid, and the area is going to be the base, which is t, times the average height, which is the average velocity, and that's going to give us the change in position. Questions from last time? No, I didn't say that. So the area under one of these curves is the change in the one that's on top of it. So if I were to look at the area under this curve, what it would tell me is if I figure out where the equivalent points are, which are, I guess, kind of here and here, that would give me the change in the x-coordinate there. Yes. So the area under the acceleration curve is going to give you the change in velocity. And most commonly, we're going to deal with acceleration curves that are constant, and so it's really easy to figure out the area under it, right? It's just going to be the base times the height.
Yep.
More questions? Okay, so I've written over here this kind of stack of equations, which will be written on that board next time, that deal with the case of constant acceleration. So we've got this guy, which you might remember we got by just plugging in what the velocity was in this equation. And we've got the fact that the velocity increases linearly with time. And this is just that rhombus area equation. So we've got one new equation to derive before we're kind of done with this full stack. But maybe before we do that, it might be worth a second to point out some notations and some inconsistencies in notation that we always have because we're lazy, us and the book. So the book is going to be using delta x for what we would call the displacement, the difference between the initial position and the final position. And I kind of like that notation. But when we talk about the change in velocity, the book's not bothering to do that, right? They could call that delta v just as well. Similarly, when the book, we could call this time increment delta t, but the book doesn't do that. They call that t. So in kind of the bottom line is sometimes we write the deltas and sometimes we don't. And it's probably best to keep in mind all of these various equations. So this equation, for example, in the book, this quantity will be listed as delta x. Okay, so we got one equation to derive, and then we can start solving some problems. So what we've got is a relationship between position and velocity. And what we have here is an equation that has a lot of those same terms. So that equation says that delta x divided by t, that's just the displacement divided by the time. It's the same thing as the average velocity. And we could rearrange that if we want by saying that the displacement is just the time times the average velocity, right? Could have said that last time. Now, we can calculate the time by using another equation. If we use this equation here, we can solve for the time. Right? So that equation says that the velocity is equal to the initial velocity plus the slope times the time, which says that the change in velocity divided by the acceleration is the time. So if I plug that in here, what I've got is v minus v naught and v plus v naught divided by a and 2 should give me the position. So this quantity where we have plus and minus, I hope it's familiar to you from algebra, but we can work it out. So we've got this term times this term. That's v squared. We've got this term times that term. That's plus v times v naught. We got this term times this term with this minus sign, so that's minus v naught v. And finally, we got those two terms, which is minus v naught squared. And that's all over 2 times the acceleration. And you can see these guys cancel. So we've got v squared minus v naught squared divided by 2a. And if we bring the 2a up, we've got exactly what we wanted for our third equation. Okay, so these are the equations that are for sure going to be on your cheat sheet for the exam, and will for sure be the content of the quiz. Kind of the tricky thing is, how do you decide from a word problem which equation is going to be the one that's going to be helpful? And to do that, you really want to kind of notice what's in it and what's not in it. So in an ideal situation, you'll have an equation where you know everything except one thing, and then you can solve for that one thing. So it's important to recognize what's in it and what's not. For these two equations, I would say they're a little bit special. This is the only equation that doesn't involve time. So if you have a problem where you don't know anything about the time, this is kind of the first one you're going to turn to. This is the only equation that doesn't involve the acceleration. So if you've got a problem that you don't know what the acceleration is, this is the one you're going to turn to. This one doesn't involve any positions. So you want to think about that one when you're not involved, when you don't have positions. This one kind of has everything. So it's kind of the last one that you want to use, is I guess what I would say. Yes?
Can we have a cheat sheet for this?
No. So what's going to happen is that these equations will be on the board sitting there. So they'll be available to you if you have good eyesight. Or even if you want to sit where you're sitting, there's no reason you can't walk down there and take the quiz. Right, so for that 10 minutes, just pick a seat that's in the A row, as opposed to the A, B, C, oops row. Okay, more questions? Okay, so there's the agenda. Let's go at it. The previous class liked it with the lights like this so they could read the problem better as opposed to see the answer better. So unless you have a radically different opinion from that other class, that's what we'll do. So the first problem, 28, has to do with the science fiction author Jules Verne. This is kind of before rockets, and he wanted to have a science fiction story of people going to the moon. So the way he did it was by having a big gun. So he had a, you know, 2 football field long gun, and we'll calculate in a month how fast you have to go to hit the moon, and that's the speed, basically 11 kilometers per second. So if you're going to have a gun that's going to shoot a bullet in which the people are, they don't come back, what's the acceleration that's required? So in this problem, it's implicit in how bullets work is that they start from rest. So we know the initial velocity, and we know the final velocity, and we know the distance, and they're asking us for the acceleration. And nobody is saying anything about time. So the equation that seems to best match what we know and what we don't know is this guy. The only thing we don't know there is the acceleration, and that's exactly what they wanted us to calculate. So the initial speed is 0. The final speed is this, basically 11 kilometers per second, 10.97. The distance that this thing is traveling is this 220 meters. And we're supposed to find the acceleration. And what we've got is that v squared minus v naught squared is equal to 2 times the acceleration times the displacement. So the acceleration is going to be the final speed squared minus the initial speed squared divided by 2 times the displacement. And all we have to do is plug and chug. Right, so what we've got is this 10.97 kilometers per second squared, the initial velocity is 0, and we've got 220 meters. Now we've got kind of a unit problem. That is to say, we've got distances that are both in kilometers and meters, and we have to choose. Right? We've got to choose one to be consistent. And in some sense, it doesn't matter which, right? But practically, people usually measure accelerations in meters per second squared. Notice, for example, from the reading that the acceleration of gravity is 9.8 meters per second squared. It's about the only number I'm going to want you to memorize for quite a time. So, and it's super easy to convert kilometers to meters, right? Because the kilo just means 1,000. So all I need to do is to take 10.97 times 1,000 and square it, subtracting zero is fast, and divide it by 220 meters. Okay, so 10.97, enter exponent 3, and square it, divide it by 2 and 220. And what I get is something like 200,000 . And let's check our units. So we had meters per second squared, all divided by meters. And so that's going to give us meters per second squared. Very commonly, just to put things in scale, accelerations are often written as a multiple of g. The acceleration of gravity. So it turns out, for example, that if you want to have a person remain in one piece, it's smart to limit your accelerations to 10 or 20 times the acceleration of gravity. More than that is results in a many-bodied person. So we can calculate what that number, of course, is by taking this 2.74 times 10 to the fifth meters per second squared and dividing it by the 9.8 meters per second squared and get the acceleration in terms of g. And, you know, pretty obviously it's way more than 20. Right? So it's basically 2.8 times 10 to the fourth g. Yeah, so little bit of a problem for Jules Verne, but it is science fiction. So. Okay, so we have a car that's accelerating from rest to a speed of 40 miles per hour in 12 seconds, and we're supposed to figure out the distance and what the acceleration is. So first of all, this is kind of a typical case where unit conversion comes in, right? Because we're used to measuring car speeds and airplane speeds in miles per hour, but we want to have them in the metric system. We want to have them in meters per second. So kind of the first thing we're going to want to do is to convert that velocity into good metric units. So we have 40 miles in an hour. And you don't have to memorize this, but I've done enough of these problems that I remember that it's 1609 meters in a mile. And there's really no excuse for not knowing that an hour has 60 minutes, except these lecture hours, which seem to be longer. And every minute has 60 seconds. So in 1 hour, there are 60 minutes, each one of which is 60 seconds. You know, 60 times 60, I can do it in my head. It's 3600 seconds in an hour. So if I just crank that out, I got 40 times 1609, divide it by 3600, and I get a velocity that is 17.9 meters per second, right? Because the hours went away, the miles went away, and I was left with meters per second. So there's an important kind of lesson here to keep in mind, and that is that notice that the velocity in meters per second was, I don't know, roughly speaking, half of what the velocity was in miles per hour. It's really helpful to have some ballpark sort of idea what answer to expect when you're working an exam. So if you have a car that's going 100,000 meters a second, you know, let's redo that calculation. So roughly speaking, very crudely speaking, miles per hour, meters per second, they're kind of the same thing, but meters per second maybe half as much. Okay, so Let's actually work the second problem first, just because it's the easiest part to work, right? We could have worked that from this problem back here, right? Acceleration is just the change in velocity divided by the time. So acceleration is the final velocity minus the initial velocity divided by the time. The final velocity is this 40 miles per hour, 17.9 meters per second. The initial velocity was zero, and this all happened in 10 seconds, or 12 seconds. So if I do my unit check, I've got meters per second per second. So I'm going to get out the normal units for acceleration, meters per second squared. So I have my 17.9, and I'm going to divide it by 12, and I get 1.49 meters per second squared, right? Noticeably less than g.
So you use the same equation whether it's average acceleration or constant acceleration?
So for constant something or other, it's the same thing as the instantaneous something or other, right? So we can apply these equations just fine for average or instantaneous if it's constant. And we're dealing with the case of constant acceleration. If you want, you can notice that that's exactly the same equation as this one where I've just rearranged it, right? So v minus v naught divided by t is equal to a is that equation there. Okay, so let's pretend we didn't know what the acceleration is and do part A. So for part A, it asks what distance we went. So what we know then is initial velocity, it started from rest, final velocity, and we know the time, and we're supposed to get the distance. And we're pretending we don't know what the acceleration is. So this is the equation that doesn't have the acceleration in it. We know this, this, and this, so we can use this equation to calculate what delta x is. So according to that equation, delta x, the displacement, is just the average velocity, that's the final velocity plus the initial velocity divided by 2 times the time. So we've got our final velocity, which is this 17.9 meters per second. The initial velocity is 0, divide it by 2, and multiply it by 12 seconds. Let's do a unit check. We've got meters per second times seconds, so we're going to get out meters, which is good. So all I need is my 17.9 divided by 2 and times 12, and I get 107 meters. So again, when you get an answer like this, you know, check to see the sanity check. Is 100 meters kind of a normal car scale for something? Or do cars accelerate to 40 miles an hour in 1 meter, or does it take them 100,000 meters, right? 100 meters seems about right. Okay, so I think this question is designed to kind of fool us. So the situation is we're at a railroad crossing, and the front of the train, the engine comes whizzing by at 82.4 kilometers per hour. And we're sitting there looking at our watch. The train is slowing down, so it's seeming to take forever. Finally, the caboose, if these things had cabooses, goes by, and it's slowed down to 16.4 kilometers an hour. And the train is 400 meters long. And the question is, how long did you wait? And I think what's a little bit tricky about this is that the problem is kind of suggesting thinking about the engine and the caboose, whereas what we've always talked about is one object, right? These things all have applied to a object. So instead of focusing on the caboose and the engine, let's just focus on the engine. So let's say that the initial position of the engine is at the crossroads, zero. And of course, when the caboose goes by, since the train is 400 meters long, the engine is now at 400 meters. So the engine has traveled 400 meters, and it's had this change of velocity that we can calculate, and we're after the time. So we know initial position, zero, final position of the engine is 400 meters. We know the initial and final velocity, and we're after the time. This is the guy that does it, right? So all we have to do is to plug and chug. Well, we have to do some unit conversion too. So we have the initial velocity is this 82.4. And the final velocity is this 16.4. The change in the location of the engine is 400 meters. And we're supposed to figure out what the time is. And we know from that equation that the change in position divided by the time is the same thing as the average of the velocities. So all we have to do is to bring this up and bring that down. The change in position divided by the average velocity is equal to the time. Okay. Now we could convert the 82.4 and convert the 16.4 and then add them together. But I think it makes more sense to add these two things together, right? They are asked to be together, and then convert. So if we've got the 82.4 and the 16.4, that adds up to 98.8 kilometers per hour. We know that there are 1,000 meters in a kilometer. And we know that in 1 hour, there are 3600 seconds. We've multiplied by one twice, right? Because 1,000 meters is exactly the same thing as a kilometer, and an hour is exactly the same thing as 3,600 seconds. But in terms of units, I've arranged things so that the things that I didn't want disappear, and I'm going to end up with meters a second. So I'll multiply by 1,000, divide by 3,600, and this total velocity is, well, what should it be, roughly speaking? Yeah, something noticeably less than 98, but not hugely less. And according to my calculator, it's 27.4 meters per second. So this time is going to be the 400 meters divided by the 27.4 meters per second all over 2. And I get half a minute, 29.2 seconds. Okay. So see what's missing. Figure it out. So here a baseball has a hang time of about 6 seconds. So it goes up for 3 seconds. It's going to take 3 seconds to get down. We're supposed to figure out what the ball's initial velocity is and the height that it reaches. Well, this is kind of a common enough problem that it's kind of smart to work it generically. So if we look at position versus time for this baseball, right, it goes up and it comes down. And we know that the time it takes to reach that maximum is 3 seconds. So what kind of mathematical feature is present for the maximum height. How can we figure out what the maximum height is? Louder? Yeah, the slope is zero. Said differently, what this means is at maximum, it was going up before it reached its maximum, and it's going down afterwards. So if we were to look at the velocity versus time, the velocity started out, let me try and draw this accurately, the velocity started out big and it got less and less and less, and then it started coming down where the velocity is negative. So we're going to reach a maximum height when the upward speed is stopped. So we know that in general, the velocity is equal to the initial velocity times the acceleration times time. And from your reading, you know that the acceleration of gravity is this number that we call 9.8 meters per second. And this is negative acceleration. So the acceleration we're talking about is minus g. This maximum has the situation that the velocity at the top is zero. So if we rearrange this equation, we've got zero should be the initial velocity minus gt. So one way you can think about this equation is we started with some big speed and we're bleeding off that speed as we're going up against gravity. How long do we have to wait until we've bled off all the speed? Right, so we're losing speed at the rate of 9.8 meters per second squared. So if we just kind of rearrange this equation, we've got gt is equal to v naught. So the time to reach maximum speed is given by v naught divided by g. Now, the position versus time, delta x, that's equal to the initial velocity times time plus 1/2 the acceleration times time squared. We now know what the time is. We can plug that in. That'll give us this maximum height. And we know the acceleration is minus g. So what we've got here is v naught times the time, which is v naught over g, minus, because we have our coordinate system that's going up, so gravity is pulling in the opposite direction, minus 1/2 g times v naught over g squared. So here it's v naught squared divided by g. And here it's v naught squared. Well, one of these g's disappears, so it's divided by g. We can factor that. And that's kind of a generic formula for height. So these are not fundamental formulas. These are the sorts of formulas you might put on your cheat sheet to deal with this particular problem of how long does it take to reach maximum height? And of course, twice that time would be the so-called hang time. And we can get the maximum altitude by plugging into that equation. So for these particular problems, we're actually trying to find the initial velocity. We know the time and g. So the initial velocity is equal to the time it takes to bleed off all that velocity. So that's 9.8 times 3 seconds. Let's check our units. We've got meters per second squared times seconds. So we are going to get meters per second, which is what we consider normal. And we've got 9.8 times 3. So that's 29.4 meters per second. Yes. Yeah, I agree. So what we've got here, let's just focus on this term. We've got 1/2 g v naught squared divided by g squared. boom, boom. And the one, the minus is also a little bit tricky. That came from the acceleration being negative.
How did you get the one?
Ah, there's always a one. I can put a one any place I want, right? 621 is equal to 621 times 1. Just because you don't see it, don't mean it's not there. You can always add a 1. Well, you can always multiply by a 1. You can't add a 1. More questions? So, I don't know, I'm used to 100 mile an hour fastballs and things like that. I kind of don't know what 29.4 meters per second is. So just to put things in perspective, what is that in miles per hour? So we can unit convert, right? So we've got 29.4 meters per second. And, you know, memorize this constant now that 1609 meters is a mile. And we know that 3,600 seconds are in an hour. So if I multiply all those things together, 3,600,1609, what I get is, I don't know, I'm kind of surprised that it's that small, 66 miles per hour.
It's because it's coming off the bat, it's not actually the pitch itself.
Yeah, but usually.
Yes, it is.
Usually you can hit further than you can throw. Okay, so what else were we supposed to figure out here?
Height.
So we've got the equation. All we need to do is to plug and chug. So we've got 1/2 times the speed . Let's check our units. We've got meters squared per second squared from squaring the velocity, and we're dividing by meters per second squared. So the second squareds go away and one of the meters go away, and we're left with meters. In terms of this towering hit, we've got our 29.4 squared, divide that by 9.8, divide it by 2, and I get 44 meters high. Not all that high. Questions? Make sure I don't make numerical mistakes. I guess I didn't bother to figure out the height in this one. Okay. I think it's 54 that's next. 56? No, 54. I guess that was 54, so now it's on to 56. So, back when jet aircraft were just starting to be made, the kind of question was, could you safely eject from them? And it turns out, even today, the answer is maybe. Lots of body parts are left inside the cockpits of planes as the ejection seat is ejected, and most of the body is ejected with it. So back in 1954, we have a test of something that's going nearly supersonic, 632 miles an hour, and it's going to be brought to rest in 1.4 seconds. And we're supposed to figure out what the acceleration, this is deacceleration, what the negative acceleration was during this time period, and how much distance did it take to bring this guy to stop. And right, we're hoping it's not a whole lot more than 20 Gs or something like that, because that's the multiple pieces. Cutoff point. Okay, so the acceleration is going to be super easy to find, right? Could have done that last time, because we know the change in velocity and we know the change in time. How about the distance? And we'll do that in a second, but how about the distance? So we know the initial speed is moving fast, we know the final speed, it's stopped, and we know the time, and we're after the distance. So I know this equation is getting more than its fair share of use for no particular reason. That's the equation that has what we care about. No acceleration and everything we're after. So the displacement that's going to occur is going to be the time times the average velocity. And we know that the time is 1.4 seconds. The final velocity is zero. The initial velocity is the 632 miles per hour, I think. So it's, for speed, it's unit conversion time, right? So we've got the 632 miles per hour. 1609 meters in a mile. In 1 hour, there are 3,600 seconds. I've nicely arranged things so that the miles disappear and the hours disappear, and the only thing left over are meters per second. So we've got the 632, the 1609, and the 3600. And so again, guesstimate the answer, right? We're thinking that it should be half or so of this number. So I don't know, 300 or something meters a second. And turns out that it's 282.5 meters per second. So the distance, it's going to be 1.4 times this 282.5 divided by 2. That's the average velocity. We can do our unit check. We've got seconds times meters per second, so we're going to get meters. And takes about 2 football fields to bring this guy to rest. The acceleration was easy, right? It's the final velocity minus the initial velocity divided by the time. Started at zero, was originally going at 282.5, and it did this in 1.4 seconds. And the answer is 202 meters per second squared. In terms of g, if I divide that by 9.8, this is 20.6 g. So it's on the hairy edge of survivable. So you remember last time we had those questions where you went halfway and then you had figured out what speed you needed to do to complete it to get the same average speed? So this is kind of a similar question that's maybe slightly more realistic, because people don't run at a constant rate, right? They burn up every ounce of energy. They go as fast as they can for the final little bit. They put on a spurt at the end. So this person is supposed to run a 12-minute mile. And after 10 minutes, they've got 500 yards to go. So puts on a spurt of 0.15 meters per second squared, will they make it? And if they're overdoing it, you know, kind of what's the minimum acceleration that they could get to be successful? We might as well work that second part first. Obviously, if it only takes 0.1 meters per second to do it, then you can do it for sure with a faster acceleration. So if we think about what we know, apparently, before this spurt, this person was going at a constant speed that we could calculate, right? It's 1 mile less 500 yards divided by 10 minutes. So we know V naught. I have to do some work to get it. And we know what the distance we need to travel is, right? We need to travel that 500 yards, and we know the time we have to do it in, right? We need to do it in 2 minutes, because that's what we have left on the clock. And what we want is the acceleration. And that's exactly what we've got, right, in this top equation. We know everything in that top equation except the acceleration, and that's what we can calculate. Okay, so let's do the work to get the initial velocity. So the velocity is, of course, the distance it's traveled, which is 1 mile less 500 yards in 10 minutes. How long is a mile?
60 yards.
Yeah. We might as well do it in yards, I think. And of course, 10 minutes is going to be 600 seconds. So the initial velocity is the 1760 yards less 500 yards divided by 600 seconds. And it comes out even, so it's exactly 2.1 yards per second. So for the acceleration that's required, we've got the equation that the distance we travel is equal to the initial velocity times time plus 1/2 the acceleration times time squared. And what we're interested in is the acceleration. We pretty much know everything else. Now, we could plug in numbers at this point, but it is just faster to move letters around than it is numbers with lots of digits. So let me deal with the letters for a while. So I've got the 500 meters that I need to go less V naught t. That's supposed to be 1/2 a t squared. So the acceleration should be delta x minus V naught t times 2 divided by the time that I need to travel. So I need to go 500 meters. I'm going at 2.1 yards per second. I've got 120 seconds to do that. Let's check our units. We've got yards upstairs, and we've got seconds squared downstairs, so we're getting an acceleration in yards per second squared, pretty much the same as meters per second squared. So we got 500, 2.1, 120, and then 2 and 120 squared, and I get 0.034. yards per second squared. Okay, so we don't even need to bother to convert that to see that that's clearly less than the 0.15 meters per second squared. So yes, she can do it, and she only has to work about a fifth as hard as she maybe thought she had to work. So this is kind of an interesting question, given the combination of things that we're given. So we're not given the initial velocity. So this truck is going to run into a tree, and it's going to have the brakes on. It's going to be skidding. It's going to go a distance of 62.4 meters, and they tell us what the acceleration is, and they tell us what the time is, but they don't tell us anything about the velocities. We don't know the initial velocity, and we're supposed to find the final velocity. Well, so acceleration times and distances. Well, that kind of suggests this guy again, right? Except that guy doesn't have the final velocity, it's got the initial velocity in it. But that's a start. Because if I know what the initial velocity is, I know how fast you're deaccelerating, so I should be able to calculate the final velocity for free. Right? So this guy here is no help because we have absolutely no idea about the velocities, no idea about the velocities, no ideas about the velocities. So it's not a perfect choice. It doesn't give us our answer in one step, but at least it puts us a little ways down the road. It gives us the initial velocity. Okay, so let's see what we can get out of that. So we know that the displacement is 62.4 meters. We know that the acceleration, of course he's slowing down, it's negative acceleration, minus 5.6 meters per second squared, and this all happens in a time that is 4.2 seconds. And we know that delta x is equal to v naught t plus 1/2 a t squared. Remember that that acceleration is really negative, so it's subtracting things. So I could plug in numbers, but it's just faster to deal with letters than it is with the numbers. So if I bring this at squared, which I know, over to the other side of the equation, I have delta x minus 1/2 at squared. That's v naught t. So the initial velocity is this delta x minus, and it's really going to be plus because the acceleration is negative, divided by t. Okay, so I've got the 62.4 meters minus a minus, so it's plus 1/2 5.6 times the time, which is 4.2 squared, all divided by 4.2. Okay, 62.4, 5.6 half of that, and then 4.2 squared. So the numerator, I've got about 20. Boy, I must have made a mistake. Try it again. Oh, wait. Okay, I think I know what I did. So I think this is going to be 82.8, but I don't trust myself. I'm going to do it again. So 55.6 divided by 2, 4.2 squared times all of that, and then 62.4 plus. I love it when I get three different answers every time I work it. Third time's the charm. 5.6, half of that, 4.2 squared times all of that, 62.4 plus. I got that one twice, so it's probably right. 4.2 divided by. So I've got 26.6 meters per second, which is, you know, kind of a normal sort of speed. What's the final speed? That's really what the problem asked. Well, the velocity is equal to the initial velocity plus the acceleration times time. I know that the initial velocity is 26.6, and the acceleration is minus 5.6, and the time is 4.2 seconds. So I've got my 5.6 and my 4.2, and I get a final velocity that is 3.1 meters per second. Okay. Last on the list and 10 minutes to go. Well, worked out. So this is kind of a made-up problem, I guess. So we've got a climber who's got two rocks. and she's up a 50-meter cliff, and she throws one rock down, and the speed of that is she throws it down with a speed of 2 meters a second. She waits a second, and she throws the other one down harder, hard enough so that they both hit at the same time. And we're supposed to figure out lots of things. Okay. So for this first problem, what do we know? We know the distance that it's going to fall, right? 50 meters. We know the initial speed that it was thrown down. We don't know the time. We'd like to know how long it took to hit the ground. And that's all nicely set up for this sort of an equation. But it's not going to be a linear equation. It's going to be a quadratic equation that we're going to need to solve. So it's our friend the quadratic formula. But before we get quite there, there's kind of a choice that we want to make. And I kind of choose things a little bit differently, I think, from the book, and I'm sure we both have our reasons for it. The book pretty much always wants to choose the y-axis going up, and therefore the force of gravity is down and this throw is down, and those are both negative quantities. I kind of like, when I have this sort of problem, to make my axis go down. Right? So I'm going to have 0 be the top of the cliff, and the bottom of the cliff is going to be at 50, and now throwing it down and gravity are both going to be positive numbers. So it doesn't really matter. You can set up your coordinate system any way you want, but when things are basically going down, I like to set my coordinate system that's basically going down. When things are going up, I'm happy to have my coordinate system basically go up. But why have two negatives when I can have two positives? But I don't know, just discrimination against negatives, I guess. Okay, so the equation is this guy here. So the displacement we're looking for is 50 meters. And we know that we're throwing it down, but with my coordinate system, down is still going to be plus at 2 meters a second. Oops. And we know that the acceleration of gravity is 9.8, and it's plus now because I made my thing go down, times t squared. And we're supposed to solve this equation for time. So first of all, let's kind of get this in standard form by moving the 50 to the other side of the equation and putting the quadratic term first. All right, so we have 4.9 times t squared plus 2 times t minus 50 equals 0. In the kind of generic formula for quadratic equation, this is at least what I was taught to call A. This is what I was taught to call B, and this, including that minus sign, is what I was taught to call C. That is to say, in the generic case, we have 0 is equal to ax squared plus bx plus c. And the solution is that x is equal to the opposite of b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a. It's in Appendix A, lest you forget. So there are two solutions to this quadratic, and we're going to be interested in the positive time one, right? Anything that's negative time is not going to be a realistic possibility. So what I've got is minus 2, because b is equal to 2, plus, because I want the positive result, the square root of 2 squared minus a minus is going to be plus, so it's going to be plus 4 times 4.9 times 50 all over 2a, which is 9.8. So I've got 4 times 4.9 times 50, and then I've got 2 squared, which is 4, add all of that up and take the square root. So for this piece of it, I get basically 31. And I want to subtract 2 from that and divide it all by 9.8. And I get basically 3 seconds. How fast did you have to throw the second rock in order to succeed? Well, the second rock needs to make that same traveling distance in 2 seconds, right? We have to take off 1 second. So there we have delta x is equal to v naught t plus 1/2 at squared. I'm still going to use my coordinate system that's aimed down. So A is going to be plus 9.8 seconds. The time that I'm required to have is 2 seconds. And the distance I need to travel is 50 meters. So the only thing I don't know is the speed that I need to throw it down in order to achieve this.
Just a question. On the bottom, that 9.8, shouldn't it be 2A?
Yes, so it is 2A.
Oh, the A is, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was 9.8, I just
yeah.
Got it.
I knew that that was 1/2 g times 2, so I cheated. Okay, so here it's v naught that we want to get. So let's continue to use letters. So I've got delta x minus 1/2 a t squared. That's really going to be minus because that a is positive. That's equal to v naught t. So v naught is going to be delta x minus 1/2 a t squared divided by t. So we've got our 50 meters minus 1/2, 9.8. We're going to have to do it in 2 seconds. So I've got 50. The half and the 2 squared is just going to give me 9.8 times 2. And I get 15.2 meters a second. Because the problem, we figured out the first one took 3 seconds to hit the ground.
Oh, so less than.
And it's one less than that. So, I don't know, kind of reviewing the important stuff. Quiz next time. So how that'll work is it'll be a short 10-minute quiz that's similar to the assigned homework. I guarantee you it'll involve these equations and the value of g. Those will be written on the board over there. You're free to sit someplace else just for taking the quiz. We're starting labs, and so you need 2 lab notebooks. You have your choice. You can go spend $10 at the bookstore, or you can go into room Peter Engel 102 and get them for free. There's an example of an old quiz online, and there is a screencast that shows how to solve that quiz online. So you can check those out too.